This is Mariposa's monthly leadership forum. Today, we're excited to welcome Diane Kaufman. Thanks for being here. Diane is the CEO of HR Bullcrap LLC and is a workplace game changer providing HR expertise that can reform and revolutionize workplace cultures, leadership, talent, and strategy. She's a former senior vice president of global human resources for Egerton. She has vast experience in multiple functions and industries in the global HR and business world, and including championing cultures of pure productivity that get results with a no-nonsense approach. Diane is also the author of the book, HR Bullcrap, Revolutionizing Your Workplace Culture. In addition, she is a mentor to young female athletes, combining personal growth and development with building strong, healthy relationships. Diane is a former NCAA Division I athlete, which provides her the know-how to share her knowledge and experiences. You can see her website at www.hrbullcrap.com. And you can find her on LinkedIn, of course, and you can find her book on Amazon. So the first thing I need to ask you about is, I believe you were a track athlete, correct?
I was. I ran short sprints, 60 meter at the U, University of Minnesota, 100, 200 in relays.
Wow. I was on a track team as well. I loved it because of all the different things going on at once, right? Cheer for other people and things like that. So I love that you were a Division I athlete. I wasn't a Division I athlete, but I was a Division I coach. So just love that experience. And I certainly think it helps a lot when it comes to what we're doing right now, helping organizations.
I do too.
So with that in mind, if you could tell us a little bit more about your background, I'd be curious to know more about how you came to writing your book and why you decided to write a book like that and name it that as well. And just tell us a little bit more about your journey.
I'm going to speak just a little bit about the athlete thing because it drove me to do what I wanted to do. I don't think I would have been that noticed by Big Ten schools, but my sights were on a Big Ten school. That's all I wanted to do was run for the University of Minnesota, Golden Gophers. And small farm girl in Minnesota, worked hard, worked jobs, ran track, state championships. I asked for a scholarship and I got a full ride. So You can only get sometimes what you want in life if you go after it and ask for it. All you can get is a no. That was a big part of also helping my career and so forth. But I worked 30 years in HR. 15 of those were executive role globally, all over many countries, like you said, 67 countries. And I learned through great people that I surrounded myself with and that I was fortunate to be around to learn great things. I learned from some really phenomenal leadership of what to do. And I also learned what not to do. And I think both were very important to formulate what I think works. And it takes both angles to really learn from people.
Definitely.
And with that experience, I left the corporate world on my own choice. When I left, I had notebooks all over the house and I started jotting things and talking to people and still mentoring people and they're mentoring me and conversations like, you really need to write about that. That's really good. Like you were so no nonsense and you just got things done. And I just started jotting and a book formulated and came to fruition.
There's lots of interesting things in your book, but one of the things I want to start out with is this idea of how HR can inspire culture and both figure out what that is and also figure out what it could be. Well, let's talk about hiring first. You talk about they're doing it wrong. What are they doing wrong?
Well, I think majority of companies miss the boat on using the best resource possible that is free, that is super knowledgeable, that is super talented, that work hard, that know the company and know the culture and know the product, and that's their own people. And we all know the track record of employee referral. They tend to perform very well. So we implemented strategies that was in absolutely everybody's goal, objective strategy was to evangelize, and it became infectious that people needed to network. They needed to connect, they needed to network, and they needed to use their employee resources. And it was phenomenal. And we never paid a dime for a referral because people wanted to do it. They wanted to grow the company. They knew great talent surrounds themselves with great talent. So that was number one. Number two is not everybody's a great electrical engineer. Not everyone's a great operational person. Not everyone's great at shipping. Not everyone's great at product development. Don't even put me in engineering. It would be frightening. So people also have great interview skills. You can train, develop, coach, mentor, which you always should do. Always should do. Help people. But some people just have an ability to do it. So think outside and pull in those people that know how to interview with no bias or try to be not biased, and bring those people in to help you interview. It doesn't have to be the status, traditional, typical person. It doesn't have to be 25 people from the engineering department. It could be across the board.
Right.
And we did that at Ergotron. We pulled in great interviewers. The other thing is the processes, Sue. They're cumbersome. Make your requisition process easy, for God's sake. I mean, 25 signatures, online approvals, you know, all this back and forth, and managers afraid they're going to lose their rec, so they want to hire right away. You know, stop. Yeah. Just make it simple, make it uncomplicated. Your time to hire will improve dramatically with that employee pool of talent. It will be cut in half. Be open-minded. I have to just kind of poke fun at this, and I really am being sarcastic, and I understand why people do it. It's well-intended. Who came up with the 8-page job description and you have to have 10 years experience? Only 10 will make you perform, not 9.5, right. 10. It's open today. Up your mind.
Right.
Yeah, open up your mind and look at the experience, look at the attitude, look at the skills, look at what they've done, look at what they've done outside of work. That builds their character. Who are right. they? And so open up your mind. And the last thing I'll say is, if you're going to use agencies or executive search firms, which we did, make sure they understand what you're about. Make sure they understand the culture and who you want to hire. Not the typical cookie cutter job stuff that you go through. Make sure they get it, because they're out there.
So I'm with you on everything you said, especially when it comes to hiring with the employees, getting the employees to be in on it. So I think that's a good idea with a caveat. And the caveat is that if people just hire people they know, there may not be as much diversity as you might want. So how is it that you propagated that? So you were able to hire and the value of diversity and ensure that you've got, you know, different types of people, different kinds of people, different open to different, you know, whether it's ethnicity, education, experience, Division I athletes, whatever you want. How did you look at that?
Well, hire all D1 athletes. Totally joking.
Yeah.
Let's take the typical online applicant tracking system that's screening all these resumes from Indeed, Glass, all the avenues you can go through.
Right.
And they're screening the preferred qualifications, master's degree. They're screening the 10-year requirement of experience, 20, you know, some of them I read 20 years experience. I'm like,
ridiculous.
Like, okay, hit me on the head, please. So to say that system is more diverse, I don't think so.
It's not either.
Exactly.
You have to do a different way.
And here's another thing, Sue. People, we know for a fact, this is fact, people do not have the same opportunities for higher education or even they don't. That's a fact. So we put these requirements on job descriptions, must have these certifications, must have a master's, must have this, must have that, preferred. And you know the system screening that. So with our employees, we had a very diverse background to begin with. We have people all over the globe. So we were in a situation that might be quite different from some companies, but probably not many. And we implemented this worldwide. Mm-hmm. So you have engineers in Asia, North America, Canada, Australia. I mean, we have a body of people that is pooling and networking and connecting. I have a hard time believe that that's not going to get you as diverse workforce as an ATS system screening, but we also use those tools as well.
Right. Gotcha. Okay. So let's move on to some of these other things you were talking about that I love. So this idea of employee surveys being a waste of time. Yeah, they definitely can be a waste of time. So let's talk about what we should be doing instead. How do we determine what the culture is? This is like, even in the before, I mean, I think it's even harder now. What the culture is before COVID, you know, what the culture is, how do you cultivate culture, and how do you determine culture, and then how do you cultivate culture?
I think there's many different avenues to that, to be honest with you. And to me, it starts with your talent and your leadership. It absolutely starts with your leadership. If you want to cultivate a very healthy culture, I would align myself with your article that you wrote on sustaining culture, even through these times, with communication, motivation, and design. I mean, those are words that I could just relate to with what we did in our companies. But I would say that you have to start with leadership, because if you don't get that right and you don't develop and help them to be phenomenal leaders in times like this, and even in any other time, the culture will be much harder to achieve. So to me, you have to get your leadership team, including your CEO, your executives, have to be aligned. Number one, that culture is imperative.
Right.
It is as important as any strategy on that PowerPoint they're showing over and over again, culture. And it has to be absorbed and engaged by leadership first and infiltrated throughout the organization. If people trust their leadership and believe that their behavior is truly about making a better place to work, they'll hang in there with you. And that comes to trust, affirmation of employees, and reward of employees. But it starts with your leadership. I have a tool. It's an amazing tool. There's no charge to it. It's totally free. You can get it. You have it today. You actually have it. You can access it and you can turn it on. And it's called communication. And have to communicate. It's free, people.
We can talk about that a little bit. I mean, I agree with you. I mean, I think that we've got to, especially now with COVID, I mean, where everyone's at home, it makes communication even more important. So tell me some of the things that you are suggesting to people in terms of how to, again, both determine and cultivate culture. Trying to do this on Zoom, trying to do this, at home. A lot of people are saying, oh gosh, we already had a pretty clear culture, so that helps. So how do we continue to do that? I've got some tricks about that, but I'm curious, of course, as to what you say about this communication and how that perpetuates culture, can cultivate culture.
Well, it's a must. And I'll start with the basics. So I go back to leadership, and it's on them to make it happen. It's on them to get it infectious and evangelistic in a company. So let's start with a job description which I've never agreed with. They should be job improvement plans, but job descriptions. So let's just start with the basic fundamentals. We say in a job description, you must have outstanding communication skills. What the hell does that mean? Can someone tell me? What do you mean? That means you have to have the pulse of your people. You have to care enough to ask. You have to listen. You have to make your people feel heard. And number one, you have to take action on what they tell you. And number two, involve them in taking the action. That will change your culture so fast, your head will spin. But how do you do it in a COVID environment? We used to do this way before COVID. Get a list of 5 random employees. I don't care what level they're at. I don't care what they do. I'm a firm believer that everybody is equally important in a company. No job is better than any other job.
Right.
We're just different. And that's actually a quote from my dad in my book. No one's better than anyone else. We're just different. He told me that a lot. I'm like really? And it helped. It was like, keep you humble, appreciate what you have. But we have to do that also with calling employees. I can remember traveling overseas and walking on the manufacturing floor of people doing 10-hour days of manufacturing in the best environment we could provide and asking them how they were. And you have that in your paper too, like your essay, how are you doing today? It sounds so simple, but it's exactly what you need to do. And you have to do it even more during COVID. I know COVID's a horrible thing, but I believe it has forced companies to have to communicate.
Yeah.
And we should have been already.
Mm-hmm.
It's just different avenues. Does that help answer?
Yeah. One of the things you said in your book about it is like, you know, don't have meetings with people, like one-on-ones, and certainly don't have skip levels unless you, first of all, intend to have them.
Agreed. I mean,
how many of those get canceled all the time, right?
About 70%.
Yeah. Is it 70%? Okay. And then if you're going to have them, actually just what you just said, it's like, then do what they're asking you to do. If you're saying, hey, how can I support you? And you don't do it, just like having this, that's why I don't like surveys either. It's like, if you're going to have the survey and then don't do what the people are saying, then it's, you might as well not have had the survey. Don't have the survey unless you're planning on doing something about it. Or don't have the one-on-ones unless you're planning on doing something about it. Because that just makes people more frustrated.
Meeting with people daily was just a cultural acceptance in our company. The morning group meetings happened, and then you go on your job, and then you regroup during the day. I mean, it was just so ingrained that people didn't have to purposely schedule.
So you had stand-up meetings a lot.
Right, because it was just happening. You know, I think that one-on-ones are important if that helps as a tool. But if it becomes ineffective and fake, then it loses more ground than you ever started with.
Mm-hmm. What's your sense during COVID in terms of what you're hearing from your clients around isolation? And I mean, I don't, we can't necessarily put a percentage on it, but what are you noticing about that? And then what are you suggesting for people to both do for themselves and also their managers, what they can do for their folks?
I think a lot more increased communications need to happen. You're going to have people that deal with this just fine, and they can hold their own and they can be positive and manage. You're going to have people that struggle. And Sue, this sounds funny, but COVID was a huge impact that escalated these feelings. But that didn't mean these feelings didn't exist before.
That's right.
They were there. And
exacerbated the feeling.
You have to have all the employee assistance programs in place. You have to be there for people. But of all times, you have to listen carefully, and leaders have to show compassion. And at the same time, they're still struggling with driving business. They're struggling too. Everybody is. Mm-hmm. So all I can say is you have to look for resources and tools that know that you're going to get through it, that you stay. I wake up every day and I say to myself, you know, what am I grateful for today? I'm freaking here. Thank you. What else am I grateful for? I'm grateful that I had the career that I've had. I'm grateful I'm doing some other things. I'm grateful that I can reach out to people that I might know are struggling, or they help me as well. I've had my bad days, and to encourage employees to call someone they trust. Can they talk to somebody? Can they feel freedom to do that? And we have to encourage that as companies, and we have guidelines and we have protocols and we have all these things, but do we have the mental illness part nailed down? Call, get help. We're so focused on 6 feet apart and hand sanitizer and all of this, but where's our mental health culture that people need to know and be aware of? So mentoring and education, the more resources you can give people, get going, get it out there, hurry up.
So what are you noticing? I mean, we talked to our HR colleagues, obviously, but what are you noticing in terms of your HR colleagues as far as you know, let's say a company of 200 people has one, you know, head of HR and maybe one L&D person, you know, that's it. So what do you suggest to companies like that?
So I did the same thing with culture at Ergotron. We had no money. I had no budget. Go fix the culture. Let's go. You champion it. But it took everybody. Okay. So call the companies that do it well. You know why? Because these people will talk to you. They will help you. They will share their programs. Great leaders love sharing. They love it. Mm-hmm. I can remember calling Smucker's company, the jelly company.
Yeah.
They have a great culture. And I was like, I called their head of, not even their head of HR, it was like head of op or whoever I could get. And they're so willing to talk to you and shared all the things mm-hmm. they were doing culturally. They were thrilled to share it. So don't limit yourself to resources that you can tap into people who know how they have done it well. Go forth and call them, ask for help, ask for what are you doing? What are your programs? Don't limit yourself to Google and reach out and ask what they're doing, because you can implement that on a small scale. The other thing you can do is call your benefit provider and make sure they're doing their job. I'm all about holding brokers and benefits accountable. They should be helping you because you're paying, if you're uninsured or insured, doesn't really matter. You're still paying them fair amounts of money. And most of them want to help. They want people to be healthy. They want people. So your wellness part, even if you can't afford a wellness plan, you can call and tap into these resources. Have them do a Zoom with your employees. I don't care if you're global, get it going. Have them do informational meetings and resources, who to call. And also there are local resources in your area. There are tons of resources, great medical resources that will help you at no cost. So tap into your resources.
Yeah, well, Minnesota and California both have a history of that for sure. Yes. The issue is, as it's with healthcare, it's like you have to figure it out. It's just like, you know, trying to get a COVID test right now. It's like a test and vaccines, like you just have to figure it out. So it does take jumping through some hoops for sure. Yeah. But I love your idea about asking other companies.
Call them up.
So let's stop for a second, Diane, because I wanted to invite the other people on the call. Here we go. All right, Craig.
I'd love to hear your perspective about the, and I don't want to lead the witness, but about the antiquated performance review system that happens. I'd love to hear your thoughts about how to make that better.
Well, the first thing I think, how to make it better. So that means you're still doing it, correct?
I'll tell you, I'm not a fan of it. So this was teeing up a softball.
Okay. Well, how to make it better. So here's the thing. 70% of employees, and you already know this because you asked the question, Craig, so thank you. 70% of employees don't like the process and they don't think it's fair. Companies who have abolished it, including Adobe, Deloitte, and GE, Adobe gained over 80,000 hours of their management's time. Deloitte gained 1.3 million hours of their management's time doing these. And I'm talking about not discussing performance. I'm talking about documenting it, ranking and rating and all of the noise around it. The companies that have switched and abandoned them have moved to more frequent reviews and conversations called check-ins or call-ins or what. I don't care what word you want. Get a team together and have your company call it what they think is cool. Have your employees come up with a term. That'd be great. But whatever you call it, your leaders have to check in with their people. It's a must because here's the thing. They have to know the pulse of the company. They have to. We move to a more holistic approach, which involved evaluating teams and their progress, projects, special projects and their progress. And also that it still included your individual contributors because they're still helping these teams and projects move. So you're not eliminating that group because you have individual contributors. And so we evolved into, instead of measuring performance, we evolved into measuring what needs to be improved, innovated for ideas to gain growth and perform better. And we started measuring that instead of how did you do last week on this? Because that's reactive. Mm-hmm. You got to get ahead of it and be, I call it proactive performance. And however you decide as a company, as a culture to measure that can be many, many ways. But it has to work for you and your company to grow. We did a holistic approach. So we tied our comp to that, which was originally based on department goals, organizational goals, and a more broader global view of a company goal. And we eventually went with the company goal. And then that progress of the teams, the projects, the strategies, the initiatives, all aligned to that performance, and that profit was shared with everybody. It wasn't just management bonuses. We did it more on a team level, Craig, and we did away with performance reviews of ranking and rating and all of that in 2006.
It's interesting that all three of us are athletes. I mean, I think that there's a feedback, if you have feedback every day, if you're giving people feedback every day in some form, which is what happens when you're coaching a team, when you're being an athlete, you're getting feedback. It's like, it's constant. It's like in your head all the time. You know, the coach is yammer, you know, or your teammates are yammer. And it's constant feedback. And so while that's probably too much in a corporate environment, we don't do hardly any of it. So if we can just go back to like the idea of feedback. So it's both feed forward, as we've talked about, and also feedback.
It has to be constant. To me, when it doesn't happen, it becomes an excuse. Then it's not ingrained in your culture and your strategy. So how many strategies of a company have, you know, we're going to grow our profits by this much this year. We're going to ship this much product globally. We're going to produce new innovative products this much this year. How many say we're going to give the best feedback we can consistently to our employees? Have you ever seen it? Why not? That is like number one.
That'll improve performance. Yeah, that'll guarantee you improve performance. Let's keep going. Thank you, Craig, very much.
Diane.
Hi.
Hey, it's Susan. So Diane, I found in trying to migrate to this new world of constant feedback that an engineering team can be particularly challenging because they want to have a formula for everything. How in your experience have you addressed that and gotten them comfortable with something that's a little bit more ethereal than they're comfortable with?
I told engineering their formula was communicate. I understand completely what you're saying. We met with engineering departments actually across the globe because of that very issue. And we found ways that they were comfortable with. So we were really open about allowing managers to manage how they were comfortable. How many companies do that? Because they're so afraid of, well, that's different. We're going to get sued. And I'm like, no, let people manage how they feel comfortable managing. So our engineers did have very specific goals and objectives and did the red greens. They were comfortable with that. And then that made them feel more comfortable as a talking point with their people. So we absolutely allowed differences in the company to happen based on what was comfortable for that organization and department, which I find extremely unique because they wanted a tool to use. And I wasn't hung up that everyone had to use the same tool.
Great. Thank you.
Does that help, Susan?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely it does, especially when you take into a global consideration and all the unique cultural aspects that go along with it, as well as local laws in some cases.
Well, China's a whole different ballgame. They have to measure and report to the government what they're doing. So, you know, you have to exactly abide by that. But the other thing, Susan, I would say is we met with groups about how do you feel would be an effective measurement and communication tool for you to use. What would you be, ask your people. They know what they're comfortable with. They know what works with their people. And so we pulled a lot of their information from them. We did many sessions on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Susan. Who else wants to ask a question or make a comment? Jan. Hey, Jan.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing? Well, I feel like I've been exercising just listening to all the athletes. So that's... I'm glad I got a workout in this morning, but there is something to that mindset that we naturally, you know, tend to have versus others. I guess, Diane, I'd like to hear you speak a little bit more about dealing with those leaders who want it, but aren't willing to do the behavior to support it, or dealing with a difficult CEO who wants to launch it, has done it, but then is taking on behaviors that run in the face of the culture that he or she's saying they want to develop. So dealing with more of the difficulty, everything that you're saying, I've gotten some great nuggets, I get it, but I'd like to get into where you really had to go a little more toe to toe.
Well, I might not be the best person to ask because I would not have much patience for that. They're the leader of a company. They took an offer of employment. They probably have a very nice contract or offer. They took the job. I'm sure they're taking the pay for the job. And maybe if they're saying all the right things, you know, I always kind of laughed at this about everybody says, do what you say. And I always said, you better say what you're doing. So people really know the real you. And if you're comfortable with that and proud of it, then go forth. But if you're not, the one thing I would say about that is get an excellent coach or mentor, go get Sue to help them. hurry up, call her up today, because they doesn't mean they can't change. I believe in positive intent, but they obviously need help, because if that's happening, that is toxic for the company and that is costing you more than you will ever realize. So go get a professional coach, mentor that works. Get one that is known with a great track record.
Well, see, that's a difficulty, Diane, because I am the great coach in this scenario.
Okay.
And I can be very, very direct. I think the situation is one where I was asked by a board member to work with a CEO who they promoted from within, who's going to be a first-time CEO.
Okay.
And the previous CEO had created such a toxic culture. The board member said to me, "We've got Stockholm syndrome on the board and in the organization." And so the first year of this CEO, you know, everybody was so excited. She's collaborative. She listens. She's open. She's doing all these things. But now she's inadvertently getting in her own way and almost kind of creating that same salute up the chain of command to a toxic person. And the group likes to do it because they're like, what does that CEO want? I had a discussion with her today. What does it mean when your team is saying they want to please you versus they're executing the strategic plan they built? And she gets it. She goes, well, that would mean I'm just another one of the past ones. I said, well, what else does it mean? Well, it's one of their ways of not having to be accountable for the work. If we're pleasing our CEO, we're not owning it. So I had a great discussion with her about how she needs to change that dynamic and what she needs to do. And it's a little more nuanced. I mean, there's nothing that's highly negative, but there's just some of these things when you're dealing with a group that's, it's not as sophisticated. They're not in an industry where they've received a lot of training and development.
Right.
Many of them are first-time executives. So they say things, their intentions are good. There's nothing super negative happening,
right,
but there's enough of this kind of thing where the, you know, the system was built to be a certain way. And I think it keeps dragging back to that. Am I making any?
You sense? Are, because I just researched lately. You made a great point and you're so spot on. Do you know that over 90% of leaders who are put in a leadership position are surprised? They're unprepared. They are 90% are unprepared. And 98% want the training and development, but they say they don't have the time.
Right. I was going to get to that because I think that I don't think there's any malice here. I think it's about that there's not, it's just like, there's no time to give feedback. It's like, well, yeah, there is. So that's like probably the most important thing you do every day. So it's just, I think there's a time issue. There's a values issue, if you will. Or is it, there's an attention issue.
Agreed. Right?
I think attention, especially now, because people are like all over the place about where do we put my attention? Because all I'm trying to do is, you know, find out where I, you know, go on Zoom again.
I have a question for you though. Why do you think that's happening? Why?
Well, it's interesting what you just said, Sue, because, a couple of reasons. I mean, one is she's trying to create more white space, but she got her stripes as being an operator. Mm-hmm. And it's a business that's highly reactive that has to do a lot with personal safety. So I think she's addicted to the reacting and it has a hard time keeping that strategic, you know, not only what we're going to do, but how we're going to do it. She takes feedback, but I think the system, I've also, you know, in a small HR group, it's like 230 person organization that hasn't been well served by any of its people resources. And I think people like to avoid responsibility, and people who would survive in a toxic culture or stay there if they're underpaid. I mean, if you're going to pay at or beneath, you know, market or up to the midpoint, you know, what you're basically saying is we want people who are doing below average work. So they have, you know, there's a whole lot of things systemically that create that desire to, they see a brighter future, they want it, but are they willing to work that hard for it? And many of them have worked in government roles, which are more bureaucratic, where change happens slowly. So I'm not even sure they're as aware of the things that I see that ping me, that make the hair on the back of my neck go up, than what they've seen. So for her, it's getting more time to think about her messaging. We just hired a CPO that I think will help dramatically, a seasoned operator that, you know, can take them to hire. But I think sometimes that group, there's some that really like the status quo, really are threatened by excellence, and those who are going to make a stand for excellence, but they're all real nice.
Mm, yeah.
Niceness is a death in a culture. There's a difference between being nice and kind. You know, what is it? Brené Brown, clarity's kind, telling people the truth is kind, you know, if you do it in a nice way, versus being nice, which is, I don't want to be rude. I don't want to push things.
Well, nice is not clear.
Usually not.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But yeah. Well, people, thank you.
Thanks, people set their ways as really hard. I mean, I've been in family businesses, and this is the way we've always done it. And a lot of it, we know this, and you do too, is fear-based. They're afraid. They're scared. Yeah. So how do you eliminate the fear? And it sounds like you're doing a great job.
Great. Thank you.
Thanks,
both.
And everyone. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Thank you, Diane. Okay, so we're gonna wrap up here. It's like, just lots of questions. There's a two-step process you talk about in your book about culture and trust. Can you talk a little bit about that? And then we'll stop at that point.
Yep. You know, it is a two-step process. It's tell the truth and get rid of liars. And it sounds so ridiculously simple, but it's absolutely true. I mean, trust is all about the engagement of people. And when you have trust and they know their purpose in the company, they know their impact in the company, and they know their role in the company, the purpose has to be very clear. And I read another article lately that said a third of leaders do not believe that their mission statement actually exemplifies what they're doing. So, you know, we have issues there to fix. And the first thing to do is to get a clear message about what people's role are, their roles, their impact, and what they're doing. And that will help create trust. The other thing is, I believe most people are well-intended. Like even the CEO she was talking about, of course they want to do well. It's our job to help them. And, you know, I'm just very blunt and impatient. So it's very true. But I also know the impact of not having good leadership and what that does on a toll of a company and its people. It's very toxic. It's very costly. The more honesty you have and the more direct communications you have with people, the more they trust you and the more loyal they are. You know, our turnover went from 23% to under 3% in a matter of just a few years.
Wow.
And zero lost time injuries for 5 years and years, and 100% employee referrals, even though I know it was probably more diverse than using the systems at that time. They're probably way improved now.
Sure.
But the stats were there that showed us we were doing the right things. So you have
I like all the stats you're using. It helps a lot.
It does. And you have to get rid of the people that, unfortunately, if you give a fair chance and you train and you develop and you coach, but there's still those people that might be toxic, you have to move on it because people mm-hmm. see it every day. Mm-hmm. And then you have to reward.
It's a model.
It's a model. And negative you have to model, reward the people trying so hard, share mm-hmm. in the profits, mm-hmm. and you can create a lot of trust. But get rid of the people that are self-agendas, high egos. You can have high egos that are still confident, but not arrogant. You can we all have big egos, but it's a difference between arrogance and confidence.
Right. Well, I've just so enjoyed having you with us today.
I hope so.
Funny. I love how funny you are.
It's so God.
Me. Thank you so much again for being with us.
Thanks for having me, Sue. You're great.
Again, we are using this year to look at organization culture. Certainly so far this year, we're still all, most of us are at home, especially if we're in tech. That could be changing in a couple of months to more of a hybrid model. So we'll be spending more time talking about that as well. So I just want to encourage you all to come back, to tell your friends and neighbors and colleagues to come join us. You can tell today we had a pretty lively discussion. So thank you, Diane, for that.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. And we'll see you next month.